Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Taxis queue. Lit by sodium, chariots towards slumber waiting. Drops in a puddle disperse the reflection of the moon underwater.
I'm Robbie Knox, and I'm the landlord of the Moon Underwater, a mystical place where guests create their dream pub.
Oh, it's Dan.
Hello. How are you? Welcome back to the pub. How's things?
Very good, thanks. Always nice to be first one in the pub.
Yep. I mean, yeah. That often happens when you turn up at 8 a.m.
It is, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've been outside for an hour.
Have you? Yeah. Okay. It wasn't really open, just went to one of the plants in the window boxes and you've just sort of stuck in.
Yeah.
Haven't you? But yeah, what have you been up to this week? Anything good?
I went kayaking this week on the estuary.
Done the estuary. You like that estuary, don't you?
I do. I spend a lot of time there.
It feels a risky place to kayak.
It is. It's a bit rough and it's quite wide.
Mm.
And also, it's odd in the correct realm, isn't it? Because I kayaked quite a long way. And then it was a bit like in the end of the Truman Show. I just sort of hit some sort of force field and just stopped.
Oh.
And I just had to turn around and come back. Yeah.
Oh. I think there were warning signs on the bank of the force field. Yeah. You might miss them.
Yeah.
Do you know what I saw you doing the other day? Yesterday it was.
Yeah.
I saw you walking down the street,
yep,
hand in hand with a proboscis monkey that was wearing a silver medal from the 1992 Olympics. And I know you'll have a hilarious story about how that came about.
What? How I met him, or
why you were hanging around together? Yeah, the whole story, really. As quick as you can, but yeah.
Well, I had visited the safari park, and he's retired there.
Right.
His name's Gary. As you know.
Gary the monkey, yes.
And basically, they do a day release system.
Like prison?
Yeah. And if you... Because it's not that nice in the safari park. It's fine.
Kind of is a prison in some ways.
Yeah, exactly. And if you buy enough merchandise at the shop, you're allowed to choose an animal to take out with you for the day.
Right.
And I chose Gary.
Okay.
So we went out for a stroll.
Yep.
Had some ice cream.
Yep.
Yep. He's not very talkative.
No. Yeah, monkey, isn't he?
And he does sort of keep just pointing at his medal all the time.
Yeah, so what's the story behind the medal?
Reminding me of you with your marathon medals.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's the story with the medal?
Well, he is controversial. You probably remember. You're not that much younger than me.
Go on.
So he shaved his entire body.
Right.
And entered the high jump.
This monkey took part in the Barcelona Olympics?
Yeah.
Don't remember that.
Yeah. Yeah, well, because he shaved his body, he looked human.
What? And, that's not how it works.
Yeah, it is.
Right, Dad, thanks. That's enough of that. Thank you very much. Look at that. I was sorry to stop that story in full flight, but who is that sprinting across the hills with reckless abandon? It's the drinks writer, Jessica Mason. Jessica, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Welcome to the Moon Underwater. Very excited to have you here with some much needed expertise in a sea of fools here, really, sort of thing. How would you describe yourself? Is drinks writer appropriate? What things do you do so people can get an idea?
I write for The Drinks Business, which is a business publication for the trade and consumer, which is sort of print and online. Mm-hmm. I've written for lots of different magazines, but mostly drinks magazines. And I don't know. I mean, I write about pubs too. So, and done tasting notes and all sorts of things like that and lots of judging. I think drinks writer is probably more all-encompassing than drinks journalist, but I don't really mind either.
Wonderful. What was your first experience of pubs when you were growing up?
Goodness. I mean, I went to the pub quite a lot with my stepdad, and we used to go and play darts to get out of the way when my mum was cooking and various things. And I also used to go on milk rounds with him, and he used to sort of do some of his cashing up sort of in the pub, and I'd match his pint with a sort of St. Clement's or something.
Where was this? Where did you grow up?
In Enfield, North London. Yeah. And those were my first experiences, really. I think sort of that whole sort of batten down the hatches kind of feeling of going somewhere where everybody that was there wanted to be there rather than anywhere else. And I really liked it.
Did you straight away were you like, yeah, this is my place?
I don't know. I mean, I sort of used to like watching people. I like people watching, you know, a bit like when you're on the tube and you sort of look at all of the different people. I loved that about the pub when I was little. So I don't know. I don't know if I felt that sense of belonging immediately, but I was certainly keen to be a part of it.
What is it that you like about pubs now? Is it that sense of belonging?
Totally. I think pubs are so much more than just the purveyors of alcohol. I think that they're these sort of community spaces that are essentially the home from home. And so I think we really missed pubs so much, obviously, during lockdown. And we've grown new appreciation for them. So.
You mentioned it's about community spaces. Like my local pub, until recently, is actually shut down now, but it had the post office in it as well, sort of thing. Do you see a trend in the industry of pubs expanding beyond just the traditional bar area?
I think we saw that when they had to diversify and sort of, you know, offer things like cartons of milk and stuff like that. And, you know, when we were locked down during the pandemic. But I also think that, you know, I have memories of people that used to sort of collect their posts from behind the bar or leave a set of spare keys there just in case they'd got locked out. And I think that it's nice to know that there's a sort of neighbourly idea and aspect about it. But I also love the fact that you can go around different places in the UK and find places that feel just like a homely place. And you can happen upon them even if you don't live around the corner.
Have you got a favourite pub?
I have a few favourite pubs, but I mean, much as this podcast represents, it's really hard to whittle that down to just one place.
Fair enough. How did you end up getting into drinks writing? I think for a lot of fans of pubs, that's a dream job in many ways.
A lot of people say that. It's funny, isn't it? Because nobody really sort of pulls you aside at school. Careers advisors don't sort of siphon you off and say, you'd make a really good booze writer. But it was sort of fortuitous, really. What actually happened was I did a degree in English. Nobody knows what to do with a degree in English once they've finished it. But I did start working in magazines and in publishing, but mostly sort of all the things I'd seen in, you know, glossies and things I'd seen on shelf when I was a kid. And I ended up doing a postgrad in business journalism and moving from the publishing side over to the writing side. And the first job that I got was actually for a drinks website, for Just Drinks, as a journalist rather than on the publishing side. So wonderful. That's how that all occurred. And then from there, I went to different titles.
Wonderful. Right. Well, we're going to get on with designing your dream pub. Okay, we're going to talk about draft choices. First of all, how important do you think draft selection is to a pub? And what sort of mix do you think you need to have?
There are lots of different ways you could answer this. Some people would say that you need everything to be balanced. You need to be able to offer a stout, you need to be able to offer lager, you need to be able to offer a bitter or an IPA or something, and because then you're covering all bases. My feeling is that it's a bit like judging somebody on their music choices or something. You know, if they've got at least three albums that you really like, you sort of think, well, they're probably okay. And I think that it's a bit like that for pubs. So drafts are really important for me, because if I go in there and I see a couple of things that I think, oh, they really kind of know what they're doing,
yeah,
then it's somewhere that I'll go back to, or I'll push open the door a bit further and go in. So it's incredibly important. And also it sort of represents how well they want to keep the place. If you just see a sort of a tap wall with lots of sort of railway tiles and keg lines, then I don't know whether or not it offers the same level of charm and personality of some knowing that somebody's actually putting out cask ale in their pub.
Fabulous. Right. Mm. You get two choices on draft.
Thank
what
you.
What is you're very welcome. What is your first selection?
My first is Harvey's Sussex Best, and the reason I sort of pause is because I think it's quite an obvious choice. I live in Brighton. Harvey's is just, I mean, it has to be on cask, by the way.
Yeah.
Harvey's is just such a well-balanced, Harvey's Sussex Best is just such a well-balanced, well-crafted pint of beer. Good day, bad day, sunshine, rain, whether you're with a mate, whether you're about to meet somebody for the first time, setting the world to rights, anything, it's just the absolute perfect pint. You can have it with a roast, you can have it on its own.
Yeah, safe pair of hands, isn't it?
It really is. And I think that when you want to choose something that is a go-to, you know, there's lots of exciting things that we can choose nowadays. You do tend to lean in towards the things that make you feel something.
Yeah, I feel that that's something that you might enjoy quite a lot of, Dan.
Yeah, definitely. I bet it's yeah, exactly the kind of beer that I really like. Harvey's. If or whenever I'm in Sussex, that's what I'll have, I think.
I think it also says such a lot about the pub space that you're going into as well. I really love most of the pubs that I actually see it on the bar in.
Yeah.
Whether they're sort of destination country pubs or whether they're sort of, you know, tucked into Brighton sort of city centre, they've got that sort of nostalgia and charm and otherworldliness to them. I like that.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because there are certain beers or drinks in general do sort of set the mood for a place, and you kind of get an idea of what sort of place you're going to get, like
absolutely.
You say.
And you can never just have one pint of Harvey's either, because that first one is, you know, immediately laces the glass and it's gone in the heartbeat.
Yep.
So it's just that good.
It's very nice.
Dan, what do we know about it?
Well, one of the things that I found that interested me is about the water that they use for Harvey's, which is rainfall that's filtered for 30 years through the Sussex Chalk Downs, and then it's drawn from their well 60 feet below the brewery and up to the liquid reservoir at the top. And they sort of say, you know, it's they believe, and they're probably right, that even if you use the same ingredients to make a beer elsewhere, it wouldn't be the same because the water's so important to the taste of the beer. So
well, absolutely. I mean, beer's made with four ingredients, and those ingredients are affected largely by where they're grown or where they're produced. And we know that yeast is affected by location, water certainly. You know, we talk about hard and soft water, or, you know, places that have good sort of mineral waters and things like that. And it's just, and obviously hops grown in sunshine versus somewhere that's naturally irrigated, and malt too. I mean, you know, barley fields and or whatever grain mix they're going for. Those four ingredients are so important, and they're so affected by environment. So if part of what makes something taste so good is actually where it's from and it gives you that taste of the land, then yeah, I think it's something magical about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there was an interesting thing they've got on this site as well from Kenny Tutt, the MasterChef champion. Mm-hmm. And he's talking about Best, and he said that it's full of caramel and chocolate with background notes of orange peel. And he says it goes perfectly with a really big, punchy curry, like a spicy beef madras or something like that, or with a sweet and sour Thai food.
I think it can temper anything.
Yeah.
I honestly can. I think of Sussex Best as sort of like a very homely digestive biscuit that, you know, sort of sometimes you sort of think, well, do I want this? Because, you know, there are so many more exciting biscuits that we could be eating. But it's just something comforting and lovely. And that sort of maltiness is great. If it's a beer that a chef can pair with a curry, but one that I could say would be great with a Sunday roast with all the trimmings, then surely it's a go-to beer on any occasion.
Yeah. Very reliable.
Very reliable. Wonderful, wonderful first choice there, Jess. What about your second draft option? What are you going to complement this with?
It's always really tricky to choose something else on draft. And I was umming and ahhing about this one, but I've just come back from Dorset, a short holiday, and I tasted Palmer's Tally Ho while I was down there. And I visited the brewery in Bridport, and it was just... Yeah.
Yeah, I saw that. That was the children's day out, was it, to the brewery?
Yes. Yes, my 11-year-old absolutely adored it. And Darren was kind enough to take us round and show us the old brew house and everything. And they learned about, yeah.
It's beautiful, isn't it? It's sort of set, Robbie, there's a picture there. It's sort of set with a, is it like an old...
Old watermill at the back. I mean, it's actually very similar sort of setup to Harvey's, you know, in that sort of traditional sort of family brewery sense. And, you know, they've got old coppers and things like that still. And it's a working brewery, you know, it's a working engine. But that beer, Tally Ho, it was absolutely hammering it down all week, as it does on most British holidays. And we'd been to the cottage. But there's something great about then exploring local breweries, local pubs, and indulging in any indoors activities. And I think that beer is just, it's magic.
Is that sort of traditional British, I guess, countryside, old cask brewery sort of thing, something that you naturally gravitate towards, do you think?
Not sure. I do like them now, and I really like all of the knickknacks. You know, that sort of sense of when you used to go to your nan's house and there's like stuff. And I love, you know, that sort of shiny horse brass sort of feeling, the patting carpet, the old sort of truncheon on the bar for the cask ale. You think that there might be a dog sleeping by, you know, gently snoring by an open fire. All of the sights and sounds, I think, sights and sounds are all really, really integral and important. And you get quite a lot of that in country pubs. But I grew up, obviously, sort of just north of London. And most of the places that I hung out in growing up were, you know, a bit more divey, really, a bit more city-based. But I like the fact that you go in the door and it was its own little world.
Yeah, lovely. I don't think I've ever had Tally Ho.
No, it looks nice. It's 5.5%. So it's quite a strong...
It's actually classed as a strong old ale, and it's lots of rich fruit cakey flavours.
Lovely.
Yeah. The website says you can make quite a nice Tally Ho fruit cake with using the beer.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah.
It's one that even on bottle you'd want a bottle of it for your Christmas table or something.
Yeah. I think I might have to get that for Christmas. Actually, it does sound really nice. Yeah. And it's the only thatched brewery in the UK.
Oh, that's a great fact.
Yeah.
It's actually, until recently, it had a working furnace down there as well. And if you look up to where that furnace went and, you know, as the malt came in and everything else, it's a wooden brew house with a thatched roof. I mean, I'm surprised it hasn't gone up in smoke. I mean, it's really dicey. And obviously, I found out from the head brewer as well that the furnace chap was the only person who could, you know, obviously anybody who worked there could help themselves to drinks, but they were usually limited to something like 1 or 2 pints a day. But the only person that could have unlimited beer was the guy that used to, you know, put the coal in the furnace. So there would be this sleeping man to sleep in open fire, and
It does seem that the person that everyone should control their drink, apart from the guy who's in charge of fire, who should be as drunk
in
as possible.
In a wooden thatched building.
That's good. I love a thatched building. I live close to Norwich's only thatched church.
Oh.
Yeah. Interesting.
Thank you.
I'd never heard of a thatched church.
I'd never had. And I was like, oh, look at that. Ooh, that's nice. So yeah, big shout out to Thatchers, the people, the profession, not the
not the
brewery, but also hi to them.
Yeah,
them too.
Selling a little or a lot?
Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work. If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Just when you meet people outside of the drinks industry and they find out what you do, what are the questions that they always ask you?
What's your favourite drink?
Okay. Based on this podcast, so yeah.
Yeah,
we're well practiced.
No, they usually sort of tell me what I do. Okay. It's a strange one because nobody really sort of says, so, you know, you go into work, you put your bag down, what do you do? Yeah. Usually they say, so do you just taste drinks then and review them? Because I think to most people, if you put the words drinks and writer beside one another, we just sort of think of wine reviews and things that we see in magazines like that, and tasting notes and stuff. So the idea is, in most people's heads, is that you're somebody that just goes places, tastes something, and then writes down a few notes to what it's like. And that, you know, I do that sometimes, mostly when I'm judging for awards. But no, I mean, like, nobody would pay me to just do that. I mean, it's a dreadful shame. But
do you get lots of good trips doing or good sort of experiences through your work?
Yes, I do. And I didn't probably properly appreciate that when I first joined the drinks industry. Obviously, embraced the drinks industry with enthusiasm, accepted most things people offered me, and then thought about the consequences later. But the trips were always fascinating, and yet I sort of, I don't know, maybe initially I was quite stoic about it, thinking I'm here, I'm a journalist, I'm going to be impartial. But now looking back, I think, yeah, I mean, probably to epitomise one of, you know, some of the best press trips, they're places that you would never, never get to go or never choose to go on holiday, but they're utterly fascinating. And it's just a shame, I suppose, that you go as a sort of group of journalists and you're not a bunch of mates, because you want to turn to someone and go, oh my God, this is amazing, and share a moment. But usually you're just there with a bunch of people who are just writing things down.
Is that the best bit about being a drinks writer? Or what is the best bit?
I think the best bit is really just liking what you do. Of course, all of the spoils of being able to travel somewhere and see how something is made or taste something at location is an incredible perk. I hope I never get complacent about that. But No, I think enjoying what you do and always sort of learning and having something to learn. And I love the fact that the industry is such a historic industry, but then it's always constantly innovating, so there's always something new.
What's it like? You've mentioned a couple of times about judging and things. Does that feel very pressurized when you're doing that? Because that must be quite a difficult thing to do. Because it feels like you could go to a film festival and we judge, and there's all very different kinds of things. But with beers, obviously they'll be different, but there's got to be sometimes very close run
it's
thing.
It's like an endurance
beers.
Test.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that, you know, if I take a photograph of a flight of some amazing beers or a format of beers, at the start of judging or at the end of judging, most of the comments will be, oh, you know, nice work if you can get it, or you've got the best job ever or whatever. But those people, if they had a camera on me and what I'm actually doing, I'm actually scoring and writing tasting notes for every single thing that I've sipped throughout the whole day. And that might end up being something like 800 beers across 4 days or something. You have to be engaged every single moment that you are tasting something, blind tasting something, with what you're tasting. And that's a sort of a really, it's like someone's gently squeezing your head. You know, after a while, you do have to sort of step away. And not just because you're a bit gassy. You have to step away and sort of be like, okay. And it's not because you can't find all of the right words or there are better words. It's because, you know, to do a good job, you have to really not think about what you've just tasted and not think about what you're about to taste. You have to taste something in isolation.
Yeah. That must be 800 beers over 4 days. That must be...
Well, I mean, now judging is usually put into more sensible stints judges, and there are more judges and it's spanned across more days. But I have been in situations in the past where it's been that intensive.
Wow.
Are you spitting these out or are you swallowing?
Well, I mean, you can always say that you can never really properly judge the finish of a beer if you're using a spittoon. But I mean, you know, when you're doing large quantities of beers or any drinks, you have to. But
judges just lying all over the place.
I wonder why they're getting better and better.
Yeah.
Well, have you got any advice for someone judging something? I'll tell you why, because in a couple of weeks' time, I don't think I've told you this, Dan, I am one of the judges for the Norfolk Sausage Roll Awards.
Yep,
thank you.
You have done quite a lot of sausage roll videos.
I'm quite into sausage rolls in general. So is there any advice for judging something in the food and drink space?
Will you be spitting?
Well, I don't know if you're going to be a sausage roll spittoon.
The first bite is with the eye.
Right, okay. Hold it up to the light and all that stuff, yeah.
I think that if something looks good enough, you know, to taste, then that's sort of halfway there, isn't it? When you want to get somebody to order something or you want to create that sort of envy when someone else has something and you see their plate or their drink being brought over, I think that it has to look like, God, that's something I want. And if it looks a bit sloppy, no, it's never really going to cut.
I think all the other judges are like chefs and stuff, so I'm already feeling slightly like imposter syndrome here. But I probably have eaten more sausage rolls than all of them put together. So
everybody's palate is just as valid as the next person.
Okay, well, maybe not mine, but we'll see. Okay. We've talked about the best thing about being a drinks journalist. What's the worst thing about being a drinks writer or journalist?
Probably that everybody else feels, I don't know, this is, there's a lot really, I suppose. There's a certain amount of aloofness in our industry, which part and parcel is something that always nudges it forwards because it sort of seems a bit cloak and dagger and people sort of don't know why people think something's good and something's not, and they don't want to show their hand. So the ones in the know feel, you know, a little bit smug. So there's that, which I think holds our industry back quite a lot. And there's also the fact that, I don't know, maybe it's even just social media or Twitter, but you know, people's sort of just constant need to say, you're wrong. In my opinion, you're wrong. I very rarely say I'm right. I just sort of say, this is happening. This is something. Yeah. Here we are.
I think that's Twitter, isn't it? Or X is now sort of thing. That's the sort of vibe on there sort of thing. And do you find that difficult to... is that water off a duck's back or does it affect you?
It used to be. I mean, I don't know really. I mean, it really depends on what day you get me. I think that in the drinks industry in my 20s, obviously, you know, people would sort of reassert what they thought I should know, assuming I didn't know anything. And then as I got older, I would just smile and think, let them just dig their own grave and then show them what you know by correcting them later. I don't know. I don't know. It's just a little wearing because yeah. you sort of think, well, it's just the thing about our industry or the thing about drinks is that you learn more by listening, and opinions are opinions, and you know, everyone has different tastes and different thoughts. So
do people underestimate your knowledge because you're a woman often? Do you get much of that?
Yes. Well,
because it's quite a male-dominated industry, isn't
it? That has happened. The first time I visited Great British Beer Festival, I was working for a magazine where everyone was given T-shirts for the magazine with the magazine title on, and I was asked how long I'd been doing my job by somebody, and I told them that I was relatively new, and that, you know, I'd started writing, and they said, "No, how long have you been walking around for your job?" And there's an element of that actually that's run through most of my job, where someone will come over and put a hand on my shoulder and introduce everybody else by their names and job titles or who they are, and then just sort of slap me back on the shoulder and saying, "This is a nice young lady."
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm. So, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well. Well, we don't have any of that business here at the Mid Underwater.
No.
At least partly just our complete lack of knowledge of anything.
Yeah.
You get a couple of choices of bottles or cans, Jess, for your pub. What's your first choice?
I think I possibly surprised everyone, or would surprise everyone with my first choice. And my first choice is a bottle of Dr. Pepper. oh, I'm so pleased.
Is that the one that we've is that the one that the bell's picked then, is it?
Yeah, it is. Dr. Pepper. Yeah, okay. I mean, I've got no control over it.
No, you don't have any control over the bell, yeah.
It's the correct, what the correct realm.
It's very strange, Jess, this. It generally, what people will come up with these incredible £180 whiskies, yet whatever seems to be in Dan's local shop seems to be what the bell seems to provide quite a lot of time.
It's weird like that. You amazing. Know, Sophie Duker had Ting, didn't she?
Yeah.
Cans of Ting.
Yep.
Yeah.
It has provided Dr. a bottle Pepper. Each of Dr. Pepper. Talk us through the choice of Dr. Pepper, which is, I will admit, is a surprising choice.
Yes, of course it is. The reason I've chosen it is because it's a surprising choice, but most of my friends will know that this features quite regularly in my life, or maybe as a fixer, as I've said many times before.
What do you mean by fixer?
Oh, sorry, a fixer. A hangover recovery drink.
Okay. That's what I thought, wasn't sure. Okay.
Yes. Yeah. So it doesn't just occupy that space, of course. It's a sort of comfort. It's a nostalgia and everything else. I don't know why we don't have it through lines in the pub because, you know, we have other sort of relatively mediocre fizzy pops available. Mm. But what I love about it is that, well, when I was growing up, we used to drink either probably a little bit of Coca-Cola or we'd maybe have Dandelion and Burdock. And I always felt like Dr. Pepper was a halfway house between the two. And I have chosen it because I do sort of think that a really good pub would probably also have something of what will fix you, will always be able to provide maybe a good Bloody Mary, some fizzy, like some pints of fizzy pop, some Barocca, and maybe have a Breville out back because yeah. they know that yeah. you're going, you know, they saw you up and drinking and dancing till the early hours. And when you wade in the next day, you're going to really need them to help you
to help get you back start on drinking it. Again. Yeah. yeah.
Well, but also I think there's a nurturing, comforting community yeah. aspect to it as well. Yeah. This is usually consumed just sort of, you know, under the cover of a duvet at home or something, hiding from the world. But I have, yeah, I have friends and neighbours who will present me the next day with a bacon, a delivered bacon sandwich and a bottle of Dr.
Oh,
Pepper.
Oh, really?
It is lovely Dr. Pepper.
Do you know what? I don't think I've had Dr. Pepper since I was a child. I can't even remember what it tastes like.
Well, one of the reasons...
Dr. Pepper, doesn't it? Yeah. There's no other taste. Yeah. Nothing else tastes like
one
this.
Of the reasons I do love it and the reason I think it's an important choice is because of the fact that I do believe that drinks need to be sort of gently intertwined, and pubs need to be gently intertwined with that sort of nostalgia and charm. And I think that you need to have that relationship with a drink if you really, truly love it, where it evokes some kind of memory or feeling or something, makes you feel something. Otherwise, it's just liquid.
Yeah, I think Vimto is my version of that. I think I'd go for a Vimto if I was picking a similar sort of drink.
Yeah, you know, or some pickled onion Monster Munch, and, you know, whatever works. I think it also works like Sink on Blocker. It just sort of goes down and disperses everything.
Yeah, I have no idea what the ingredients of Dr. Pepper are, other than I'm going to guess significant amounts of sugar.
Well,
fizzy water, sugar, colour, caramel.
Nobody knows, Robbie, because it's a secret recipe, much like...
It's got it on the side here, though.
The KFC. Oh, no, it doesn't have all them.
I think you need a bit of sugar to sort of, you know, make you work and function again a little bit sometimes.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just think I probably ate too many sweets when I was a child. And so fizzy pop kind of occupies that space for me of watching cartoons and having a day off school.
I think it's interesting as a drinks expert, they've chosen Dr. Pepper, though, because actually there's a lot of stuff about what is Dr. Pepper and the complexity of Dr. Pepper as a drink. There's, you know, the stuff that says it's sweet, but it's also peppery. It's vanilla, but there's a little bit of citrus. It's actually a bit nutty, and you can probably taste caramel. So it is quite interesting that you've chosen that, maybe the most complex tasting
soft drink.
Fizzy pop that you've... I don't know
if it was that contrived.
Yeah.
I mean,
I don't think it was.
Sounds very nice. I mean, I always veer away from expert as well, because expert sort of suggests that, you know, you've learned everything and you know everything, and there's so much always to learn. But I also quite like the fact that it works as an antithesis to this idea that, you know, you choose the best drinks that you can think of because you think about how other people will think of you and what that says about you. And really, this says more about me than me choosing some really fancy, smancy thing. I mean, I have chosen something else that's really, really quite fancy, but then, you know, this is imaginary, so I'm allowed.
But also, it's what makes you feel, you know, for a pub, it's what makes... What makes the pub that you want to create, that makes you feel homely, that makes you feel welcoming. So to have that comfort, I think, is quite important, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. I always sort of think of a pub as a bit of a hideaway or a treehouse, and I like that idea of pulling the ladder up or you know, or huddled under the duvet. And that home from home aspect is definitely something that runs through. I wish more places sold it.
Yeah, it's nice as well, and we've all got children at the table. It's nice to have things, soft drinks for kids that they get excited about as well, sort of thing. I know my kids, when they get, they'll quite often just have an apple juice or something like that. But when there's a nice variety of soft drinks, they get quite excited in the pub, which then means I can stay there longer. So
it's a bonus, isn't it?
Works both ways. Right, an unexpected but terrific choice.
I was just going to say, you talked about it as a sort of hangover cure.
Yeah.
What's your hangover cure, Robbie? Are you a Bloody Mary?
I like a Bloody Mary, but I think that's then just, I don't know if it counts as a cure if you're just drinking again. Do you know what I mean?
No.
I drinking a lot of water before I go to bed, but then you've got the downside of getting up for lots of wheeze.
Yes.
So it depends what aspect of the hangover you're most worried about. That if you're thinking headache, then water the night before.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're thinking I'm not going to get a good night's sleep, that's not going to help you. So,
no.
Yeah.
I've discovered one recently, it's worked every time. It's the way it's helped. It's peppermint tea, or Moroccan mint tea, ideally, with honey, with a spoonful of honey in. I don't know why.
Before bed or the
next day?
Moroccan mint tea.
Yeah, in any mint tea.
So mint tea with lots of sugar.
With honey.
Oh, with honey, okay.
It's really surprisingly works. I've tried it four or five times now, and I keep thinking this isn't going to keep working, but it does.
Do you need one of those pewter teapots?
No, you don't need. You don't need to. It could just be a bag of peppermint tea.
What's that thing you've got that you stick up your nose? That sounds bad. Like that
oh,
thing.
The neti pot.
Neti pot. Yeah. What's that?
That's to sort of. It's got. It's like a sort of a watering can with a long spout, and you put salted water in it, and you kind of pour it through one nostril and it comes out the other nostril.
What's the purpose of that?
It just cleans your
I think I'd rather have a
noses.
Blanket and an 80s film, some cheese on toast or something. It doesn't sound
nice. It helps you to breathe and feel. Yeah.
I can usually breathe. I could just not. Yeah. I usually just don't have any filter on my brain. I can't think properly, which is obviously an occupational hazard. So I don't get drunk when I'm working.
No, it's never a good idea, is it? There's one in the Caribbean apparently that's before drinking, rub a lemon in the armpit of your drinking arm. But I don't think it particularly works.
I'm not sure what science.
Yeah,
I'm sure Oxford University's done that.
There's a lot of science behind it.
Yeah. Okay, that's good. Yeah. No, I don't know. There's a few things that I've not ever tried, but there's quite a few sort of things coming onto the market now that are supposed hangover avoiding. I don't want to say drugs, but that sort of tablets that you take beforehand. Have you ever had any experience of that or ever tried any of those?
Usually take a Barocca or something, you know, thinking to yourself, well, you know, I'll put a lot of vitamins in and maybe that will help. But really, I think it's just water and you need something salty, you need something with sugar in and just a bit of time. And obviously the older we get, the more time it takes.
Okay. Right. Well, there we go. Still no cure for hangovers that we've discovered. Jess, what's your second choice of can or bottle to complement this? Is it Vimto?
No, it's Daya's Steady Rolling Man, which I love. I mean, it's great in can, actually. I mean, if you can, you know, when you find it on draft, obviously have it. But I love this beer because, well, also because I suppose for my draft choices, I chose things that I sort of thought people would probably lean towards colder seasons, and I think that Steady Rolling Man is a great beer in all seasons as well, but you can imagine being on a bit of dapple pavement outside the pub and it being a really nice sunshine beer too. I often get a can of it if I'm going on a train journey or something, just because it's great as a package beer.
It's one of those beers that I get if I'm drinking somewhere that's quite craft beery with someone who is wary of craft beer or doesn't really know. I'm a bit unsure what to do. I'll quite often get them a can of that and go, here you go, you'll like this. Because I've never had anyone go, no, I don't like it.
We've, you know, mentioned balance before when we talked about Harvey's, but this is balance in a slightly different way, isn't it? It's all that sort of juiciness and freshness. And each sip, you sort of just have to go, it's really good.
It's such a brilliant brewery. They're one of those ones that just everything I've ever had from them have gone, this is fabulous.
Yeah.
Do you have breweries that, not just individual beers that are safe bets for you, sort of thing? Are
ones absolutely that you go, yeah. Do, yeah, of course.
There's a few names.
Anything that Mark brews at Burning Sky, although recently had a few pints of a rise and got really raging headache. I was going to text him and complain. anything that Evan does at the Colonel. Obviously, Jeremy and Richard over down at Utopian, I think they're doing incredible things. The guys, Christian and John, and at North Brew as well, just because obviously they've been running some of the best beer pubs in the UK and then start a brewery. They're not going to start with a few rubbish beers, and Seth does some great beers there. And I don't know, I could reel off lots and lots, really, but there are certain breweries where if I see their names or if I see something in a fridge, I'll be like, well, those are my first ones. Although sometimes now and then I will just sort of go completely off piste and go and grab a Belgian quad or something. If I've got a long train journey to do, it's good to have an emergency quad in the side pocket of your rucksack, because then you know that you get to that point where it's like, this is a bit long, I'm going to drink this and then I'll have a nice nap.
Dan, what do we know about a Steady Rolling Man?
Well, I mean, really just what Jess has told us, but I quite liked, so Day is found by Theo, is it Frain? Pronounced Frain? In 2015. So it's fairly newish brewery still, really. It's still less than 10 years old. And it just, how they talk about inventing Steady Rolling Man, it was sort of inspired by, they were listening to blues music, great sort of American blues music, and that's sort of, well, they were listening to all that while they developed Steady Rolling Man, and that's how it was born. So yeah, it was sort of feels like just they were really, you know, embedded in the culture of how to make that beer. It's exactly the thing that they were aiming for.
Yeah, I like that.
It's a fabulous beer and a fabulous choice there, Jess. What are your feelings on pub quizzes?
I'm probably not very good at pub quizzes.
Robbie will be pleased.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. Well, Dan has got a pub quiz for you now. And I don't know what it is either, but I'm dreadful at pub quizzes. Do you enjoy them?
Oh, I enjoy them. I don't know whether or not I'm the best person to be picked for the team. It's all. I'd always historically be somebody that just had two pieces of pie in Trivial Pursuit and only really knew two topics or something. Yeah. So,
What topics, what subjects are you confident in?
No, because I'll probably jinx it.
Okay.
I'm not telling you what colours the pieces of pie were. I'm just going to say that, there were few.
Okay. Yeah, I'd always, when I was a kid with Trivial Pursuit, it would just be Sport and Leisure was all I was getting. The orange one.
Always.
Yeah. Yeah. One little orange bit and the grown-ups.
Brown would always be a nightmare.
Everything else. What was brown?
Art and Literature. I'm better at that now.
Yeah, I'd be a lot better now. I'd be a lot more rounded. I probably won't get any Sport and Leisure now, but... a lot better, but
play with my son and he smashes us every time.
Does he?
Well, we sort of do the children's questions for him, but he's just
that's a good sign.
Batters us. Yeah, it is, but you know, annoying at the same time.
Okay, phones away, put a gag on Siri, it's quiz time. Elvis's black belt was in karate. I saw it on QI. No half points for saying J.K. Rowling is the lead singer of Jamiroquai.
Moira Stewart.
No, I'm afraid it was Gordon Honeycomb.
I thought we would do it about drinks, which is a bit tricky. So what I'm going to do is, it's cocktails. No. And these are all taken from our friends. I don't know anyone there, but I'm going to say our friends at the BBC Good Food website.
Yeah, we're our best buddies. Yeah, we're always are. The nights we've had out with the BBC Good Food website.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, I mean, they are mad.
They're off mad food, it should be called.
Yeah, it should be. And what I've done is I've taken some recipes of cocktails from their website. So obviously, cocktail recipes differ, don't they? You know, people add in different things and stuff. But so they're well-known cocktails. Hopefully there's no tricks. So if I was to say vodka, Kahlua and cream, you would say it was the cocktail.
A white Russian.
Exactly. Okay, so.
I feel I'm very much the underdog in this one. I'm gonna
give three recipes for cocktails. Don't give us your answers yet because we'll answer in the second part of the podcast. So just have a think. You'll have time to have a think. They're all well-known cocktails. I haven't done anything tricksy. Okay. Question one. Which cocktail is made from pineapple juice, white rum, coconut cream with an optional wedge of pineapple? Question two. Which cocktail is made from vodka, peach schnapps, cranberry juice, two juiced oranges, two slices of orange with optional glass A cherries? And question three, which cocktail is made up of bourbon, sweet vermouth, extra dry vermouth? You can correct me on my pronunciation. Angostura bitters. And again, sherry eau de vie or eau de vie. Sherry eau de vie, orange zest garnish, bourbon, sweet vermouth, extra dry vermouth, Angostura bitters, sherry eau de vie with an orange zest garnish.
I'm getting one out of three is my prediction.
That's your normal, so that's fine.
Yeah, I'll take that. I'll take that going into this.
Yeah. Are you confident, Jess?
Not particularly, ish. But yeah, I'm okay.
Okay. Well, we'll find out those in the second half of The Moon Underwater, because it is now time to leave those of you who don't support The Moon Underwater on Patreon. If you'd like to subscribe, you can head to moonunderpod.com and sign up to get ad-free extended episodes a day early, a monthly bonus podcast, and access to The Moon Underwater Social Club on Facebook. We'll see you soon in part two. We'll continue creating Jess's dream pub.
Hmm. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.